like to begin by thanking the organizers for inviting me to my very first Strings conference. I'm probably too scared of the soccer game, so I'll probably decide to go explore Waterloo. But yeah, I'm going to talk about some work that I did with Kevin Costello, who's here, and Natalie Paquette, who sort of probably gave part one of this talk in last year's String, and this will probably be some kind of a natural continuation of that. And the main theme of the talk is going to be this emerging field of celestial holography, which tries to approach flat space holography in a novel way. The main dream of celestial holography, you may have heard this slogan already in other talks, the main dream is to find a dual to quantum gravitational theories in four-dimensional asymptotically flat spacetimes, with the hope that the dual is, instead of being some kind of a co-dimension one theory, the hope is that the dual lives naturally on the celestial sphere, on the night sky. So the hope would be to find a two-dimensional dual to a four-dimensional theory of quantum gravity. In Lorentzian signature, the dual is hoped to live very explicitly on the celestial sphere. What I'm going to talk about today is going to be a very explicit and probably the very first four-dimensional example of such a construction. It's going to be a toy model, which I'm going to build in Euclidean signature, and I'm going to heavily use, but not heavily describe in the talk, ideas from twister theory. And the dual will then very naturally live on a two-dimensional sphere that consists of the boundary of twister space. The main takeaway, basically, from our example will be that, at least in our very specific example, celestial holography is explicitly going to be realized as a conjunction of twisted holography and twister string theory. Is there a pointer? No, that's not a pointer. Anyway, while you find it. So basically, twisted holography, in just general lingo, is supposed to be the study of holographic dualities for topological strings. And twister strings, again, slightly broadly, is the idea of putting topological strings on twister spaces of interesting spacetimes. And what we're going to see, what we're going to build today, is an explicit example of celestial holography on a specific asymptotically flat Riemannian four-manifold called Born space, which has a very nice twister space. So let me remind you, or just give you a very brief one-line introduction to what the twister space is. Suppose you have a four-dimensional Riemannian manifold M with some metric G. The twister space, the most basic version, is the projective two-spinner bundle. As a smooth manifold, the twister space is just supposed to be a two-sphere bundle over M, which I'll denote as capital Z. And the most beautiful property of such twister spaces that was established by Penrose and by Atiyah, Hitchin, and Singer was that if the metric on your space-time happens to be self-dual, that is, it has self-dual Weil tensor, then the twister space can repackage the conformal class of that metric completely in the form of a complex structure. So the twister space Z very naturally becomes a complex manifold of three complex dimensions. And the important part here is that twister space is a two-sphere vibration over M. That's what you need to remember. The main trick that allowed us to find a holographic duality is that for a very specific four-manifold called Born space, so Born space is, as a smooth manifold, Born space is just going to be the blow-up of C2 at the origin. That's basically taking C2, removing the origin, and smoothly replacing it with a copy of a two-sphere. If you equip that manifold with a specific metric called the Born metric, if you equip the blow-up of C2 with the Born metric, then as a lucky coincidence, the twister space happens to be precisely the deformed conifold, which is a very well-known threefold, Calabi-Yau threefold in the study of, that occurs in the study of the B model in other places, in Qumran's work. Okay. So the twister space, just to be precise, is going to be SL to C, plus a pair of four real dimensional boundary divisors, which are basically harmless and come along for the ride. And the main trick will be use this observation and simply recycle a relatively well-understood holographic duality that already exists in the literature for the B model on the deformed conifold. So the deformed conifold, SL to C, XY minus ZW equals 1, can be written firstly as ADS3 times S3. If you simply quotient out this SL to C by its right SU2 action, you can show that the resulting space is Euclidean ADS3. And there's a very well-studied holographic duality that goes by the name of twisted holography for the B model on this geometry, where the holographic dual very naturally lives on the boundary of this ADS3. And that was, this is basically the digraph buffer duality souped up and turned into a full-fledged holographic duality in the work of Castello and Gaiotto, and Bonetti and Rustelli before them. The main idea will be to simply take this holographic duality for the B model, repurpose it to work on the twister space of Born space, KK reduce along the S2 fibers, and then get a duality for the KK reduced theory that lives on Born space, and the holographic dual that would have lived on the boundary of this ADS3. So let me give you just a general introduction to the various bits and pieces of the duality. The Born's metric, as I mentioned earlier, is a complete Euclidean signature, asymptotically flat. Asymptotically flat here means asymptotically Euclidean. Four-dimensional Kähler metric on the blow-up of C2 at the origin. And this happens to be a background of conformal gravity rather than Einstein gravity. So the duality that we study actually realizes some kind of subsector of conformal gravity as the bulk gravitational theory. Einstein gravity is still an open problem. In any case, here's the Kähler potential of that metric. This is the easiest thing to write down. Ui are a pair of complex coordinates on C2, and in the patch C2 minus the origin of the blow-up, the Kähler potential is just going to be the Kähler potential of flat space, along with a back reaction that goes like n times log mod u squared. Mod u is just a two-dimensional norm. N here is basically going to be the analog of a kind of count for some D brains that I'll mention in a bit. So n will be an integer. For the metric to be Riemannian, n has to be positive. And here's just in pictures the twister space of Born space, or at least the ADS3 times S3 patch fit. What ends up happening is that there is a very natural foliation of the ADS3 factor in ADS3 cross S3, which we discovered was a foliation by the S2 fibers of the Z2M fibration that I mentioned earlier. And what ended up happening was that we simply KK reduced the B model on this geometry, and the result actually, because of some enhanced gauge redundancy, the KK reduction never gave rise to any KK modes. And we got a very beautiful and under control theory on the four-dimensional spacetime. So the KK reduction along the fibers of this geometry gives you, along basically, these are basically spheroids, which touch both the zero and infinity north and south poles of the boundary of this ADS3. You simply KK reduce along these spheroids, and you get a theory of gravity that goes by the name of the Mabuchi functional in the literature. And we also get a matter sector, which is known as the 4D WCW model. And we basically, this is obtained by studying a type 1 version of the B model on the deformed conifold and simply performing KK reduction. As you can see just from the picture, the foliation, these spheroids along which I KK reduce, break the conformal symmetry of the ADS3. So the conformal symmetry, these spheroids are actually symmetric prolate spheroids. So the conformal symmetry is simply broken to the subgroup that preserves the axis that goes through zero and infinity, and that's a C star subgroup. That implies that at the level of space-time, the isometry group of Born space gets broken to U1 times SU2 instead of the full Lorentz group, SU2 times SU2, and translations get broken as well. And the dual CFT then realizes the left-moving U1, the complexification of that becomes the remaining conformal group of the holographic dual. And this basically points to the fact that the dual theory has to support some defects. It can't be a full-blown CFT. It has to support some defects that should live at zero and infinity. All right, so let me tell you quickly about the two sides of the duality. The bulk theory here on Born space that we get from KK reduction basically consists of a theory. So there's a gravitational sector that I've shown on the first line. There's a matter sector that I've shown on the second. The gravitational sector is a theory of perturbations of the Kähler potential. And here, K is the background Kähler potential of Born space that I displayed on the previous slide, and rho is the field. And the matter sector is a four-dimensional WZW model that was studied as a model for self-dual Young-Mills at the classical level. So G here is going to be a group-valued map from space-time to a specific group SO8. The choice of SO8 here arises from a certain anomaly cancellation condition when you study the type 1b model, which is completely analogous to the choice of SO32 that arises in the usual type 1 superstring. Just at the level of equations of motion, just to give some familiarity, the first line is known as the Mabuchi functional. I'm going to call it Mabuchi gravity. The equation of motion of this, instead of being Einstein gravity, Ricci flat, this is slightly less constraining. It's like a fourth order equation of motion for rho here, and it imposes that the perturbed metric be scalar flat instead of Ricci flat. So you should think of it as the Kähler subsector of self-dual conformal gravity rather than actual Einstein gravity. While the equation of motion of the second line imposes basically the anti-self-duality of a certain SO8 gauge field on this four-dimensional space-time that you can construct in a standardish way out of this group-valued field. So this WZW action gives you a model for self-dual Young-Mills at the classical level. Another interesting point is that the parameter N that measures the back reaction, that measures the strength of Born space, is actually, you can show that it's quantized by using the fact that the 4D WZW model requires the integrality of the associated Kähler class. And this perturbation is designed to preserve the Kähler class. So you just have to check integrality of the Kähler class of Born space. And that ends up telling you that N is quantized, and Riemannian nature of the metric tells you that N is a positive integer. But here's what we are here really for. Here's the celestial chiral algebra, which is going to be the dual of this four-dimensional theory. The celestial chiral algebra is obtained as a theory, well, okay. The twisted space of Born space, we showed in our paper with Kevin and Natalie. The twisted space of Born space can be obtained by the back reaction of a stack of D1 brains placed in the twisted space of flat space in the B model. The twister string, the topological B model on the twister space of flat space looks basically like the B model on the resolved conifold, along with a bunch of boundaries. And Kevin, in a paper in 21, showed how to extend the B model by giving appropriate boundary conditions on these boundaries. At the end of the day, you can just think of this as a setup that puts D1 brains in the resolved conifold, like the digraph of a setup, and then back react the D1 brains, and that generates the deformed conifold. And that gives you the two sides of the duality if you add in these extra boundaries. So the dual chiral algebra ends up being the theory living on those D1 brains. Since we're studying a type 1 version, there's also 8 D5 brains and an O5 plane that are there to basically perform the orient defolding for us. The theory is then an SPN gauge theory, SPN because we're working in the type 1 model. And SO8 gets engineered by the D5 brains as a flavor symmetry. So it's a two-dimensional SPN gauge theory, completely analogous to the N equals 4 super Young-Mills gauge theory in ADS5 CFT4. It has two types of fields. These come from D1, D1, and D1, D5 strings. The D1, D1 fields are just the Higgs fields of the D1 brains, and they're given by, again, these fields have some Chan-Patton indices, little I's and index that measures the normal fluctuations of the D1 brains. A and B are the D1, D1 indices associated to the SPN fundamental, basically which brain the string ends on. And similarly, the D1, D5 strings have a flavor index that's valued in SO8, so one endpoint on D5 and another on the D1. And in a gauge in which we set the gauge field to zero of the SPN, in a gauge where we set the SPN gauge field to zero, you basically just get a theory with free field OP. So you can really do computations with this. Another point I wanted to make is that these are weight half zero bosons. So the chiral algebra that this generates is going to be a non-unitary chiral algebra. All right, so because of the boundaries that I mentioned above, the only effect of those boundaries happens to be that these fields are now allowed some boundary conditions at those boundaries, and these boundary conditions can be found by a method called Kozul duality that was pioneered by Kevin and Natalie and then reviewed by Natalie and Brian over the last 2 years, so last 3 years. And basically what ends up happening is you look at the most general bulk brain couplings before the back reaction and just try to see what are the allowed poles. And in the case where the bulk is the twisted space of flat space, these are the allowed poles that you have, yeah, that you can give to your D1, D1, and D1, D5 strings. Here, I've given the highest order pole you can give X is a 1 over Z pole, and the highest order pole that you can give I is a 1 over root Z pole. So we're thinking of I as a Ramon sector world sheet boson, you can say. It's completely analogous to the world sheet fermion in the Ramon sector. And basically, that's the effect of the defects. You can read more details in the paper, of course, about how we derive these boundary conditions. Okay, I want to end, before I get to the conclusions, by giving you at least one test of the duality so that you can trust me that I'm not bullshitting you. So the simplest test of the duality that we were able to do was compute a two-point scattering amplitude in the theory on Bern space, and then explicitly match it with the two-point correlator of certain soft currents that were motivated from the soft holographic symmetry algebras discovered by Andy and Alfredo, Mina, and Monica earlier in the decade, I guess. Yeah, in 2020. Well, so you have a two-dimensional gauge theory. You first have to build gauge invariant operators whose correlators you can compute. I want to work in the WZW sector, so my gauge invariant operators have to have some adjoint indices. I build the adjoint index as the antisymmetric square of the fundamental of SO8. And then these are basically the kind of operators I can write down where I've contracted all the SPN indices using the appropriate SPN symplectic form. And this is a simple gauge invariant single trace operator that you might have seen, for example, in n=4 as well. These are operators that are dual to soft modes of the 4D WZW states on Bern space. The idea to compute amplitudes now is to first construct a generating functional that could be dual to hard states. So you can study hard states, which are going to be states of massless particles labeled by some null momenta. Just like in flat space, these hard states, you can actually solve the Laplace equation and show that there are hard states that are labeled by three parameters, omega, z, and z bar. Omega acts like the energy of the state that you're scattering, and z and z bar act like the, z is the coordinate on the dual sphere, of course, but z and z bar can be thought of as the coordinates, angular coordinates on the complexified celestial sphere. Since we're working in Euclidean signature, we only have a complex momenta, so you can take z and z bar to be real, to be complex and independent. And et voila, if you simply compute, in fact, if you forget the defects, even better, you just forget the defects, compute the two-point function of two of these hard generating functional operators by using just free field Weck contractions, you reproduce a formula that was already found for such an amplitude by Hocking, Page, and Pope in 1980. So I sat down and computed this amplitude working very hard on Mathematica for a month, and then I found that the chiral algebra produces the amplitude in two lines. Free field contractions are very easy. Then I found that the amplitude had been computed by Hocking, so it was sad, but at least it was very helpful. So you get basically a Bessel function here, and you can basically compute this amplitude just keeping the planar correlators in as a series in capital N, and this is completely reproduced by the chiral algebra. Okay, we've also done some further tests. Let me conclude by just mentioning some further tests in future directions. We've also managed to match with some really hard work the collinear limits of the bulk scattering amplitude with some simple OPE calculations in the dual chiral algebra of those hard operators at zeroth and first order as a series in N. Again, just the planar diagrams. We've also shown at higher order in the multiplicity that at least as long as you're working with amplitudes, you can actually forget about the defects. And the scattering amplitudes, at least at tree level, you can prove using twistorial techniques, find an enhanced conformal symmetry. The C star gets enhanced to a full SL to C left conformal symmetry. So we conjecture that they're computed by the chiral algebra without defects, which gives a perfect avenue for future tests if somebody is not comfortable with the defects, like me. Finally, we've also shown that if you want to understand what the defects give you, then you'll end up finding not amplitudes, but form factors in the bulk. So one of the points was that the theory in the bulk was, the gravitational theory in the bulk was not a genuine gravitational theory. This is a point worth stressing, actually. The theory in the bulk here, that I call Mabuchi gravity, is not a genuine spin 2 gravitational theory. It's a theory of a single scalar field that sort of acts as a perturbation to the Kähler scalar. So it's somewhat analogous to JT gravity. But since it's a gauge fixed theory, it doesn't have that full diffeomorphism freedom. You can study form factors in that theory. And the form factors you end up finding that certain specific form factors are in one-to-one correspondence with correlators that you can build recursively in the presence of defect one-point functions. All right, let me just mention some of the things that I think are really there on the horizon now, that the most approachable things that we can probably do as the next steps. So one of the main questions I get, in my opinion, is whether there's a dual for Witten's supersymmetric twister string, because Witten's supersymmetric twister string gives you your usual 4D self-dual Yang-Mills and your usual 4D conformal gravity, rather than these gauge-fixed models of scalar fields. So that's an interesting question. And it also tells you how you can sort of venture beyond self-dual sectors by studying stacks of D1 brains at different locations instead of a single stack of D1 brains. So can we venture beyond self-dual sectors using in celestial holography using these techniques? And the next step is basically along the same lines. There are multi-centered generalizations of twisted holography that were discovered by Gyoto and Budzik. And they're also sort of multi-centered generalizations of the back reaction are mentioned already in Hartnoll and Policastro in the context of twisted strings in 2004. So can we realize their multi-centered geometries by back reactions of multiple stacks of D-brains? And the most interesting of all problems is, of course, can we discover duality for Einstein gravity? And at least self-dual Einstein gravity. And there have been some really interesting steps taken in this direction by Biddleston, Hubelin, and Skinner. So you should go and look at Simon's gong show for that. Thanks for listening. I'd be happy to take, yeah.
Okay, thank you, Atul. And we still have our mic runners, Ivan and Elisa, going to throw it to anybody in the audience.
Nice talk.
Thanks.
So the B model is given, and the action for the B model is the holomorphic Chern-Simon coupled to Collider-Spencer theory. The action you wrote down, have you shown that reduces to this?
So in the case of holomorphic Chern-Simons, we can show at the level of the action of shell that it reduces. And it has the same. The only subtlety is that it uses some enhanced gauge invariance on twister space to kill off the KK modes. And as long as the action is anomaly free and all those gauge symmetries are anomaly free, we can show that holomorphic Chern-Simons explicitly reduces to the 4D Vesumino-Witten model. At the level of the Mabuchi gravity theory, we've shown it at the level of equations of motion. We haven't fully worked out the reduction of Collider-Spencer at the level of the action itself.
So in particular, the one loop corrections may not be the same, correct?
We haven't tested it, so they might very well differ, yeah. But we really believe they are.
no further questions in the audience? Any online? Or we're good? We're back on time then. Okay, that's great.